Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, it's Football Tuesday, and the college football season is now wrapped up. It's complete. Last night, the Clemson Tigers pick up their second national championship over Dabo Swinney, their third overall, as they blast through the Alabama Crimson Tide in dominating fashion. I mean, dominating fashion. I can't say that enough. 44-16. Jordan Buscarini alongside Vinny Rondinelli. Happy to be with you live from the Auto Forum Studios. And Vinny, I can't state that enough when I say dominating, because I've never seen a Nick Saban team so overly matched. I don't think it's ever happened. I mean, you go back and you look at the 14-point loss. I think going into this game, I think 14 was the biggest loss
he's
ever
career.
Had,
yeah.
Which is saying something. Last night, Bama was overmatched.
Yeah, but it was not their night. And
it wasn't.
He knew it. It just didn't, right from the start, you have a Heisman Trophy winner make a bad play and spot a team that don't need any help at all. Clemson looked amazing. They were ready to play. They spotted them 7 points right off the top, and they made a lot of mistakes, and Clemson did not. They took advantage of every mistake Alabama made. Clemson made them pay for it. And Dabo did a great job. I think it's interesting. You know, they were talking before the game. Dabo and Nick are friends.
Right, yeah.
And Nick,
Alabama ties.
Oh
there.
Yeah, Saban offered Dabo a job when he took that Alabama job.
Right,
but they have a bet going, knowing that they're the two best teams and they're always going to be playing each other. They got a bet going: loser buys dinner. And so now they're 2-2. In the last 4 years, they played every year for the last 4 years, and it's tied up 2-2. So interesting. It was. I was expecting more, but
came I was kinda, expecting more.
I was expecting more. And that second quarter came. The game kind of got away. But kudos to Dabo and Trevor Lawrence and Justin Ross.
Justin Ross.
That was the best player on the field.
I know that everyone's talking about Trevor Lawrence, but it's Justin Ross. Thank you.
He was the best player on the field last night. He was
dominant. Freshman.
Oh, he was dominant.
And here's the thing with the college football playoff. You have to now look. You have to win two games and win the national championship once you get into the playoffs, right? So I focus on the body of work over two games. And the reason I do that is because if you look at 1-4, how good is 4? How good is 3, right? I mean, yeah. So I'm looking at the body of work. Clemson took advantage of every Notre Dame mistake, and they made a very good football team look very average.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And both those games really, I mean, they were blowouts, you know, by score.
They played out similar.
They were blowouts by score, but it was because Clemson took advantage of mistakes. Those games, you look at them, as a coach looks at them, 2 or 3 plays in either one of those games, you're in the third quarter, 20-20, 28-20.
Right. No, I agree with you.
Notre Dame and Alabama made mistakes, and Clemson capitalized. That'd be the only difference, really. They were not as far off as the score said they were.
No, I agree with you. And when I look at Clemson's body of work out of the two games, it's masterful.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the way you describe it. It's masterful.
It was. They deserve their national championship. Yep.
Even going back to Bama, though, against Oklahoma, you get rid of the first quarter, Oklahoma was right there with Bama in the second, third, and fourth quarter.
Yeah, that defense, yeah, they had some trouble with Oklahoma, and they didn't adjust well. And I wonder, too, an interesting point, and Herbstreit brought it up. I love Kirk Herbstreit.
Mm-hmm.
He brought it up last night. There's been zero turnover in the last 3 years, I think is what he told, what are we saying, on the Clemson coaching staff. And the last 4 years, there's been 15 coaches leave Alabama for better jobs. And I think last night that was a big part of it.
That's a fair statement.
That was a big part of it. I think the same coaches, same players, 4 years in a row for Clemson and a different cast every year for Alabama, I think that was a major part of it last night. And you can see in the adjustments that were made between, you know, the adjustments Clemson made and things they attacked and the things that bothered Tua that hadn't bothered him before.
Well, and you and I had this conversation about Tua, and I've brought this up multiple times. Tua has never been in a situation to where he's had to play from behind. He's never been in a high-pressured situation, and he was last night.
Yeah.
Last year, he comes in for Jalen Hurts in a relief effort. I don't believe there was any pressure on Tua whatsoever because that game was over last year. Georgia had the national championship won.
Yeah.
And Tua comes in.
That was a prayer.
Could play loose, could play free. And you know Saban was telling him this on the sideline. You go out and do you. All right? Our backs are up against the wall. That's what. How many times, when, or better yet, let me ask you this. When does an undefeated number one team in the country make a change at quarterback? When you got
nothing to lose, yeah.
You're back. I mean, yeah,
that's a desperation maneuver.
Desperation. That's the word I'm looking for. So then we go into this season. He never had to play from behind one time this year. I mean, the most challenging game on Bama's schedule before we get to the postseason was LSU, and the defense dominated. Tua could have had a mediocre game, and it wouldn't have mattered because the defense dominated. And so last night, it was the first time in his career that Tua had to make plays. And it's different. It's just different. When you're playing from behind and you're playing against a team that's got seven NFL defensive players on the opposite side of you, it's just different.
It was. And he was, and you could see it. There was, you know, the first play of the game. It was a horrible read and a horrible throw. Clemson don't need the help. And then you spot him 7 points. They go down and score. It kind of, he calms himself down. But there was a sack midway through the second quarter on his front side. The guy was wide open. All he has to do is just pitch it to the crossing route, and he may score. He was so open. He totally missed that. The second interception, the corner drops, and that comeback route there, that was an easy 15-yard play. He could have kicked it to him. He was open, and he throws it long and throws an interception. So major mistakes that he made changed that game instantly.
And I think even going back, the play calling was not good last night for Alabama. I don't think that Tua was ever put in a situation inside the red zone. There are three trips, and they were lengthy, efficient drives, and Alabama had success moving the football.
Yeah, they went up and down the field.
They
did. Yeah, and then they got to the red zone, and they did stall. Yeah, they did stall. And they didn't run the ball well enough.
They did not run the ball well enough.
Or enough is what I should say.
They didn't run it well enough. I mean, really, when you look at
Jacobs was on fire there for a while, and they kept, and then they switched him out for Najee Harris. Yeah, he's a good player, but Jacobs was on fire.
Harris averaged, I think, like 6 yards per carry. And I think you talk about Jacobs, he was like 4 or 5 yards per carry. I don't have the stats in front of me, but it's something along the lines of that.
Just keep giving it to him.
Why the parity? I guess that's my question, because there were three different backs, because you have Damian Harris.
Yes.
Right? You have Najee Harris, and you have Josh Jacobs. So why the running back by committee approach when you have a back chopping off 6-7 yards per carry? Why? I guess I don't understand that kind of logic. And then to force Tua in the situations that he was put in inside the 25-yard line. To me, it was kind of mind-boggling, Vinny. I don't know if
I agree with you. I think the second and third quarter where the game really got away. It was 14-13 at the end of the 14-13 in the first quarter off a missed field goal and the spotted 7 points. So it was a competitive game going into the second quarter. Clemson kind of blew it open there with 17. But twice there, Alabama could have scored and put that right back into it. And once it got in the red zone, they had some real problems the second, third quarter with the play calling. It didn't make sense to me.
No.
You know, and again, here's another guy. It's a first year. You know, they did have 500 yards of offense.
Yeah, they did.
They had 500 yards of offense. So there's some things. But again, Mike Locksley, that was the best Alabama offense ever, apparently. Record for yards per game, efficiency, their greatest achievement ever. He's leaving. So there's another coach leaving.
Well, Dabo's going to run into this. Look, I always go back to an interview that we had here on the show. It was one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. We had Bobby Bowden for like an hour on the show. And I remember asking Bobby, it was around the same time that Jimbo Fisher had just won a national championship at Florida State. And I asked him, what's the biggest hurdle now? And he said, well, everyone's going to offer you a job. And that is a distraction. And everyone's going to offer your coordinators a job. Continuity doesn't exist once you win a championship. Now, for Clemson, it has.
It has.
But it's not going to keep up.
Well, and that's going to be a problem. That's a hurdle he's going to have to face that Saban's been facing. Like you said last night, I think it was 15 of those coaches have left in them 4 years. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing amount of turnover.
Right.
And you see Kirby Smart doing a great job at Georgia.
Yep.
Pruitt left, and he's at Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Loxley's just leaving to become the coach at Maryland. So there's a lot of turnover. And I think there was some... I think they played a factor last night, more than people think. Well, I really do, because that second and third quarter where the game got away, there was a lot of
panic.
Yes, maybe that's the word. You know, the fake field goal.
It's panic. That's desperation.
That's desperation. There's some things, because Bama was doing a great job moving the ball, and then they'd stall out with changing things up. It was almost like they lost a rhythm. And, you know, maybe that continuity has a big part of it,
And the one thing that I will, and I, you know, I'm not saying that this isn't one of Nick Saban's strong points, because it is, but if you recall when Bowden left Clemson, the reason why Dabo got the job is because Dabo was a recruiting coordinator, and he was a fantastic recruiter.
Yeah.
For those who don't know,
he was a receivers coach.
He was a receivers coach. He actually walked away from football for a couple of years. He was selling real estate, gets a job at Clemson. He's a recruiting coordinator, worked his way up to a receivers coach. But when Bowden walked away, he was given the job because of his ability to recruit. When you don't have the continuity on your coaching staff, that's on you. And he's done a great job over the last 5-6 years. But let's see how this continues. And the other thing that I want to say before we take a look at some of the other headlines, I want to say this about Bama. I was asked today, is this the end, the changing of the guard?
No.
Bama went 14-1. They lost to a Clemson team that is loaded with NFL talent. They still have Tua for at least another season.
This team's not
going anywhere.
And you know, you got to think of it too. And sometimes it's just the breaks. Jordan, that was Bama's worst game ever. And Clemson's finest work. And you're 14-13 at the end of the first quarter.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, everything went wrong for Bama.
It did.
And so, yeah, they'll be back. Don't worry about that. They'll be back.
Let's move over to the NFL. There are some news and notes, and I want to talk about this a little bit later on in the show. First off, Cliff Kingsbury has been named the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. We talked about this yesterday. Travis wasn't happy with the idea that USC's offensive coordinator was interviewing for NFL jobs. He said it looked bad for USC. I don't know what the agreements and the negotiation process was like. To me, I don't know why Cliff Kingsbury gets his job in Arizona. I don't know. I can't wrap my head around a coach coming from the college ranks with a losing record. Okay, and we're not talking about Western Michigan.
No, no.
We're not talking about Western Kentucky. We're not talking about, New Mexico State. He was at Texas Tech, you take a look at the NFL talent that they have churned out over the last, 10, 11 years. Mm-hmm. There have been some NFL talent,
yeah,
right?
They've had some players.
They're in a conference that I hate. I can't stand to watch Big 12 football. And he has a losing record in this conference, and this guy gets fired up.
I don't understand that.
I'm missing something here,
and I've been racking my brain thinking about it. I'm a USC fan. I wasn't happy with the hire at USC. I told some USC fans I was going, dude, this is a guy.
I get the college ranks, right, though, Vinny.
But still, like you said, he's 35 and 40. This is a guy that doesn't have a major win on his resume. He doesn't even have a major bowl win on his resume.
He did nothing.
He's done nothing in a conference that's known for nothing. Let's be honest, Big 12, I think, is one of the worst conferences in football, college football.
Well, Power 5.
The Power 5, but for sure. Yeah, for sure.
It's above the Pac-12, and that's it. And it's above the Pac-12 because you have
some
Oklahoma.
In some years.
Because you have Oklahoma. Yeah,
Oklahoma, that's true.
And I guess Texas. But other than that, I'm telling you.
I don't get this one either.
I don't understand.
I don't see the fit either, because Rosen's not a spread and mobile quarterback like he's coached in the past. And your best weapon's your running back.
I don't get it.
Head scratcher here. Total head scratcher.
Now, former Cardinals coach Bruce Arians is back in the NFL after a short stay away. He is now the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We will talk about that. And also, the Denver Broncos have it narrowed down to two choices. And Vinny, as you sit across from me wearing Los Angeles Chargers gear, I got to ask you, Mike Munchak, or do you want to go with Vic Fangio here? And why is this even a discussion? Why is it, if Fangio wants the job,
why has this guy not had a job before? He's a master coach. For me, I'm hoping they pick Munchak.
Me and
Philip Rivers, we don't want to see Von Miller and Bradley Chubb with Vic Fangio. So I'm hoping they pick Munchak. I don't get the allure with Munchak. I don't think he has they do need offensive line help. I know that, but this is a guy that doesn't have a great head coaching resume.
Look, if they go with Munchak, John Elway is done within 2 seasons.
I agree. He's not a quarterback-friendly coach to begin with, and that's their biggest problem. So I don't see this one. I'm hoping they pick him.
I'm sure you
and
are.
That's rooting from my heart. Logically, the best candidate for me, I would say, would be Vic Fangio. They're going to need somebody. They're going to need a young quarterback, too. So a young offensive mind is something I don't understand why that's not part of it. I really don't.
Listen, Fangio wants the job. He can have it. Like, as far as I'm concerned, you take a look at what the Broncos have defensively. I don't know why you wouldn't want this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm blown away by it. He's a great coach.
Let's move over to the NBA, and we'll take a look at the schedule before we pause for just a moment. Plenty of action tonight, 5 o'clock hour. We have the Pacers on the road to take on the Cavaliers. The 76ers will welcome the Wizards. 5:30 tonight, the Nuggets taking on the Miami Heat. Toronto will play host to Atlanta. 6 o'clock hour, one game tonight. We get Minnesota at OKC. Paul George playing amazing basketball right now. 7 o'clock hour tonight, Sacramento at Phoenix. Golden State will play host to New York at 8:30 in the nightcap game. It's the Hornets and the Clippers. We've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we'll talk local sports. Tonight, the Carbon Lady Dinos will go toe-to-toe with the Union Cougars on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak. We'll talk to Coach Ted Bianco about that in just a moment. It's Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The Carbon High School Dino Dynamics took part in the Falcon Classic Drill Competition this past weekend on Friday and Saturday in Clearfield, Utah. The team competed in a variety of different styles, including military, dance, and kick. Over 20 schools from around the state competed in the annual competition. The Dino Dynamics did quite well in the competition. They won Best Spirited overall for 3A. They logged 4 first-place finishes, 1 second, and 1 third. The Carbon Dino Dynamics will continue the season later on this week throughout the month of January. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio for more regarding the Carbon High School Drill Team. We stick with high school sports, but we'll move over to girls basketball. And tonight, the Emory Lady Spartans will look to move to 3-0 in Region 15 play as they travel on the road to meet the Manti Templars. So far this season, the Lady Spartans have an unbeaten record in both region and non-region games. They'll look to continue that trend tonight against Manti. It will be the first of 2 games this week, with the second coming against North St. Pete at home on Thursday. Earlier this week, we were joined by Coach Lynn Tuttle of the Emory Lady Spartans, and he talked about the 2 games of competition his team will see.
Manti, they're down a little bit. Mount Pleasant, they're struggling early and well all through preseason. My main concern is going over there not playing down to the level of the opponent we're playing, at the same time trying to improve everything that we need improvement on. We've got a few areas in our game that still need improvement. I feel like we're getting to the point kind of now where we left off last year, but I still see bigger things for this team in the future.
Tip-off for tonight's contest is set for 7 p.m. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will bring you the results as soon as they become available. Now, we stick with high school, but we move over to Carbon. And tonight, the Lady Dinos will return home as they take on the Union Cougars. Start time for tonight's game is set for 7 p.m. It is pegged as a highly important contest in Region 14. As it sits right now, the Lady Dinos have the best record in the division. They're a perfect 3-0. Union, on the flip side, is sitting at 2-2 following a couple of losses in league play. Most recently, the Lady Cougars suffered a setback against the Juab Wasps, falling on the road 53-45. A win here for the Lady Dinos would put them one step closer to completing the first go-around of region play unbeaten. Start time for tonight's contest again is set for 7 p.m., and it is a home contest. We move over to junior college athletics, and the USU Eastern Eagles will play host to this year's Scenic West Athletic Conference basketball tournament, which will take place on February 28th through March 2nd. This particular event comes through once every 4 years, and it is expected to have a huge impact on the local economy. Businesses and community leaders are urged to put their best foot forward during this event, as many visitors will be in town. Recently, USU Eastern Vice Chancellor Greg Dart was a guest in the Castle Country Radio studios, and he talked a little bit about the event.
That's unbelievably exciting. So at the end of February, just when it seems like basketball is over, the SWAC Scenic West Athletic Conference Tournament will be here the 28th and March 1st and 2nd. All the men's and women's teams from throughout the league are going to come here to duke out for the title. So not the last time we hosted it, but the time before that was a conference championship for the men, and we're hoping that the home atmosphere just helps out again.
Again, the USU Eastern basketball squad will play host to the Scenic West Athletic Conference Championship Tournament February 28th, March 1st, and March 2nd. Do not forget, you can listen to Eagles basketball all year long by visiting KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, and also KOALITV.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Hello, sports fans.
Time for sports.
Let the games begin.
Turn on the radio.
It's time to talk high school basketball on the Coach's Corner.
Time for some high school basketball talk here on Drive Time Sports. Coming up tonight on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak, Carbon Lady Dinos will go toe-to-toe with the Union Cougars, a highly important Region 14 contest. And we're going to talk about that more right now with our next local guest on the show today, Coach Ted Bianco. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Coach, there's an important game tonight. Carbon will play host to Union, and the way things are shaping out, it's really a stellar opportunity for this girls' team to just strengthen the lead that you guys have already developed within Region 14. I know things have gone well so far with wins over Providence Hall Delta and even Mazer Prep. Team's winning six games. You've won six games in a row, an opportunity for seven tonight at home, and again, that would just really give you guys a stranglehold on that division lead.
Well, that's our goal, is we want to continue to improve every game and keep our lead if we can. The big thing is we have to counter everything that they're going to throw at us tonight. So it's a big task for us. They have a good team. I know they're only 2-2 in league, but you know, most teams they lost to are very capable teams also. So hopefully we can step on our court tonight and take care of business at home, and that extends our lead. That makes it even a little more comfortable for us. Hopefully, I think one of the problems that happens when you go on big winning streaks is sometimes you start to feel the pressure, and hopefully we don't.
Right, right. And I know, Coach, that looking at it, it is a very deep league. You know, Region 14, if you compare it to Region 15, Richfield may be a little bit down this season. It looks as if Emory's going to run away with that league. I mean, I know you got South Sevier, you got Union, but if we take a look, or excuse me, South Sevier and Richfield, but if we take a look at Region 14, I see more capable teams at the top of this division.
I think we've done a great job of taking care of our business so far. You know, we go to Delta and win a tough one there, and then we take care of Juab pretty well at home. The big thing for us is we have to understand that we can be beaten on any given night by those guys. So, yes, they are very capable of stepping on the court and having a great night against us and putting us in a position where we don't want to be. So the depth of our league is the four public schools in this league are definitely a bit above the three charter schools in our league, but those three charter schools too can give you problems any night that they want to. So we have to be ready to play every single time we step on the court.
Looking at Union, Coach, there's three girls on this team that can do damage offensively. Reagan Anderson leads the team in scoring. She's over 12 points per contest, right around that 10-point mark. You have Carly Blake and you have Tori Ross. So, I mean, there's three girls on this team that are capable of getting it off and rolling. And I know that parity within scoring offensively is always key. Looking at this team, I mean, are those the three girls that you have to prep for defensively?
Well, for us, we want to keep the Anderson girl is away from the basket as much as we can. We can't just let her get open shots inside against us, or she's going to take advantage of us. She, in my opinion, is the key to beating that team. They have a couple guards that are pretty decent that'll get after us defensively. The Ross girl is probably their best shooter, although she hasn't been scoring a lot from out there lately. But we have to be ready for everything. You know, we have to be able to stop their penetration. We have to be able to deny the ball into the Anderson girl so she doesn't get easy baskets down low. And we got to stay out of foul trouble. That's going to be huge for us. We can't just go out there and start hacking people left and right, giving them opportunities at the free throw line. They lost a close game at Juab the other night. They lost in overtime. They had a lead through most of the second half, and it just didn't quite work out for them at the end of the game. So hopefully we can take care of our business early and continue to strengthen our league. I told the girls yesterday that they've played three teams that we've played, and we've beaten the three teams, and those three teams have beaten them. So hopefully we can give ourselves a little confidence with that and step on the court and do the things that we do well. And that's play great defense, rebound the basketball, and make some open shots.
It's crazy to think that, Coach, this next Tuesday will actually be the end of the first go-around of region play. It's going by in an absolute blur, so there's eight games left in the regular season. When we look at it front to back, is it more difficult to finish out the first section of league play unbeaten or the second when you're familiar with your opponents?
I think it's I think sometimes it's harder in the first round for the simple reason that, you know, you lose a game to a team in that first round. At least you know what you have to defend against in the second game to go beat them. So for us, in my opinion, it's the first round games are a little more difficult for the simple fact you're not as familiar with them. Second round game, you can step on the court and take care of what you need to take care of. So hopefully, we do our share of work tonight and take care of business, and then we'll get ready for them the next time we play them.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dinos. Coach, I know that one of the things you don't have to worry about the second go-around of region play is a holiday break. You guys had that, but you haven't missed a beat since. I know you did get one game in between Christmas and New Year's. You guys went toe-to-toe with West on the road, picked up a 16-point win there, and then last Thursday jumped right back into region play. Are you happy with the way the girls have looked? I guess specifically in that West game, coming off about an 8-9-day layoff.
I'm very pleased with where they're at right now. You know, things look pretty rough in those two losses that we played over in Fruita. We just didn't play well. We weren't clicking on defense, and offensively we were turning the ball over too much. We didn't do a great job of getting the ball where it needed to be in crucial situations, and we lost as a result. To these girls' credit, they learn from their mistakes and they get better from that. And like you said, I'm very proud of where they're at right now and what they've accomplished. The key is they've got to continue to get better, and that's what we're looking for as a coaching staff. Is we want to be playing our best ball going down the stretch. We don't want to go backwards by any means. So, if barring any injuries or anything like that, if we continue to improve and continue to get better at the things that we're trying to accomplish, it's going to be hard for teams to beat us down the stretch. And that's the attitude I want our kids to go into these games with, is knowing that if they do their jobs and they do them well, that they're a very hard team to beat.
I remember talking with you, Coach, following that trip to Fruita, and I don't necessarily like to use this phrase, but was it a wake-up call, or has this team just gotten better since then? Because you guys have had very little problems since coming home from Colorado.
Oh, it was a wake-up call, because, you know, we can't use any excuses as to why we do the things we do, and they, you know, they got a little bit comfortable, and once you get comfortable, you start making mistakes, And in this game, I don't think you can ever be comfortable. I think you always have to be trying to strive for more and get better. I think you probably saw that a little bit last night in the national championship football game. I think Alabama's quarterback got a little bit comfortable with some things, and it didn't work out so well for him, and they struggled as a result. And once you get into that comfort zone, anything bad can happen at any time. So we always want to try and keep our kids on edge with some things and keep them moving forward. And they've done a great job with that so far. We'll see what happens tonight.
Coach, I always try to keep track of which athletes we talk about when we get you on the show. We have talked a lot about Jordan. We have talked a lot about Jody. I want to talk about two girls that we really haven't had a lot of conversations on. First off, Abby Sacamano, who can kind of do everything for this team. I mean, she's scoring 8 points a game, handing out a few assists. She's picking up some rebounds. She's kind of stuffing the stat sheet all the way around. Maybe not something that shows up every night that you look at and you marvel, but seeing the consistency across the board, Abby's been really good for this team in that sense.
Abby's done a great job. Her shot's gotten better since she was a freshman. Her shot's totally different than what it was that year, and she's getting better and better at that every year. She's a scoring threat from anywhere on the court. She has the ability to play defense on the other team's best offensive player, and she's a dominant figure for us. She's an aggressor. She works her tail off. I love how Abby plays and what she brings to the table, and I can't imagine this team without her. She's kind of like the engine that keeps us running. So she has gotten better and better every year she's been in our program, and I couldn't be more proud of a young lady than I am of her.
Yeah, I guess the term kind of like a glue player, right? I mean, you have your standouts, but then you have the glue players that kind of mesh everything together.
Well, and there's times that she's the leading scorer on the floor for us, too, because of what she brings to the table. Her ability to drive, her ability to shoot, her ability to get the ball to open players. I mean, she's like you said earlier, she does a little bit of everything for us, and that's what we need.
We'll talk about another player, Coach, Caitlin Cripps. Caitlin, again, kind of in that same situation from time to time. She's been able to score the ball fairly efficiently at the same time. I don't know that it's to the extent of Abby, but again, it's another player that you have to be aware of where she's at on the court at all times.
well, she's a threat from outside. There's no doubt about that. And her shooting, once again, is she's another girl who's improved her shot quite a bit, and her ball handling's gotten a bit better this year, which has helped her do some things for us. She's a girl that comes off the bench for us that we rely on to get some points out of. And I've told her that several times. Your job is to come off the bench and give us a spark. And she has that ability, obviously. And she can shoot the ball. And when she's open and she's on, she's hard to stop. I remember last year she had a JV game where she popped 8 threes at North Summit last year. So that potential's there, and we look forward to that every night she steps on the court for us.
Again, Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dinos joining us right now. Coach, if we step away from girls basketball, just an update on how the athletics department is faring in general right now at Carbon High School. I know the drill team had a very exciting weekend on top of everything else that's happening, boys basketball, swimming, and wrestling. It is a fun time right now at Carbon High School.
Well, it's all starting to wind down also. We've got state tournaments coming up in wrestling and swimming here in the next 3 weeks. And so their seasons are going to be winding down. I know, I think drill team goes to one of their last competitions this weekend, and they had a great outing last weekend, and they'll be getting ready for region and state as well. So those three sports, wrestling, drill, and swimming, they're all coming to a close fairly quickly. The region swim meet, I believe, is January 24th, so... you know, of course, we have divisionals in wrestling coming up, and then the state wrestling tournaments. So those athletes, they've worked hard all year long. They've represented Carbon High very well, and we're looking forward to a great outing from them at the state tournaments.
Well, Coach, it's always a pleasure again to get you on the air and talk about the girls' basketball team and Carbon High athletics as a whole. We'll see you tonight at the game, and thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach Ted Bianco with the Carbon Lady Dinos. Do not forget tonight on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak, the Lady Dinos will take on the Union Cougars. Live coverage will begin at 6:30. Tip-off is set for 7. We'll break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. It is Football Tuesday, and there is plenty of coaching news in the NFL, and we'll discuss that when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM 750 AM. Let's talk NFL football. Of course, there's a lot of storylines with the coaching. And again, not to beat the dead horse, again, telling you on what has happened. Cliff Kingsbury, head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Why? Have you come up with anything yet?
No, still nothing.
Okay.
Still nothing.
During that last segment, you couldn't come up with anything.
No, I even looked on the internet for some help, and still nothing.
Bruce Arians in Tampa Bay, I dig it. I like
love
that
it.
A lot.
Love B.A. Yeah. Great hire.
And the Atlanta Falcons have welcomed back Dirk Cotter. He's going to join Dan Quinn's staff once again. Look, if Dan Quinn is going to remain in Atlanta, he's got to do some retooling. Great start.
Great offensive football coach and a great OC. This is going to help. This will help Matt Ryan. Good job by Dan Quinn here. And he needs it.
He needs it. You got to retool that staff. Yeah. I think it's a big step forward. Let's not spend too much time on that. Let's talk about the NFL playoffs, because if it's anything like this past weekend, damn.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. That was fun.
It was a great weekend of
football.
And we talked about that yesterday. We talked a little bit about the Bears and the heartbreak, and we talked about Indianapolis. And again, this team just finds ways to win. And the Philadelphia Eagles, I mean, this is just entertaining football. And I think it gets even better in the divisional round. Now, Saturday night, we have the Rams and the Cowboys. Saturday morning, we have the Chiefs and the Colts. I love Saturday. I mean, this is going to
be
great. Football.
Oh, this is going to be awesome. Awesome. So, first off, nobody's from the NFL is probably listening, but Roger Goodell, if anybody should tell you this, if Frank Reich ain't coach of the year, just quit the award.
I agree. 100%.
If Frank Reich is not the NFL coach of the year, stop giving out that award. Mm-hmm. It's a travesty. Man, what a bulldog. And they came down and they put it on Houston. And that was a good football team.
Yeah, that's a team. Remember,
that's a good football
Bill
team.
Bill O'Brien had one of the best turnarounds next to Indianapolis, one of the best turnarounds of the season.
And they put it on them.
And they did. I mean, for two quarters of football, they beat them up in all three aspects of the game.
And
handedly took advantage of everything that Houston was giving them. And really, Vinny, I know you and I talked about this last week, and I think we were spot on with it. They made Deshaun Watson look average.
They did, and he's a special football player, and they made him look average. And, you know, we talked a little bit about, too, you know, one of the things after we talked, I was telling my favorite football coach, I was telling my old man, Marlon Mack's going to be a big part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Marlon Mack was big in that game. Stat sheet, whatever it says, he popped off some runs and he created some space in linebackers. And I'm picking him again. I'm picking the Colts this weekend, Jordan. I'm saying it right now. I'm taking the Colts to win in Arrowhead. They got the bulldog mentality. And I'll tell you, Marlon Mack's going to be big against a average at best Kansas City defense, especially a linebacker. Average at best.
Yeah.
Average at best.
I can't disagree with you. Can I tell you the guy? You mentioned Marlon Mack. You know the guy I'm looking for? And I know he's returned to practice this week, but the guy I'm looking for Kansas City, I need a Sammy Watkins sighting at some point in time.
Oh, at some point. You give a guy $60 million, he's got you something.
Yeah, I need Sammy Watkins to do something for this team. I know Travis Kelce's going to get his. We know that Tyreek Hill is going to get his. Even Chris Conley's going to get his, right? I need Sammy Watkins to do something in this game for Kansas City, because the only way I'm leaning towards Indianapolis in this game, just based on momentum, they're playing better than anyone in the league right now.
Yeah.
They're the most dangerous team in the league right now. Okay, Kansas City has to figure out a way to demoralize Indianapolis, and you're going to do that with your passing game. That's the way you do it, right? You score.
And that is a great point. Yeah, that's a great point.
So give me some Sammy Watkins in this game if Kansas City's going to do something.
If Tyreek Hill can top off and get over the top, because if you're gonna be honest, the secondary of the Colts would be the weakest part of their team. And we can agree on that. Darius Leonard, D-line. I mean, the secondary.
Yes.
So they're gonna play out of their mind. Indianapolis, the secondary is gonna play out of their mind because Mahomes can wing it. We know it. Everybody knows it. KC's gonna get theirs. So you can expect 27 out of them. You know the offense. I think that. I'll tell you, the matchup, the best weapon for the Chiefs' defense, which is average at best, is Jones, and he's playing D-tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Quentin Nelson is, I think Quentin Nelson's a Hall of Famer right now, if he stays healthy.
I agree with you,
so
100%.
If they neutralize Jones, Andrew Luck's going to have a big day.
Well, yeah, if you give Andrew Luck time, and again, I know you and I did mention
that's an
this
average
last
defense
week,
at best.
If you give him time, not only will he beat you with his arm, he will beat you with
his
legs.
Absolutely.
He can, and that's an underrated aspect of Andrew Luck. For some reason, even coming out of Stanford, no one ever talked about that. When we talked about mobile quarterbacks, we were talking about RG3, and I was baffled by the fact that nobody was mentioning that Andrew Luck can really scoot.
He can scoot.
He's got wheels. And so if you give him time, listen, a lot of the times in close matchups, games that I'm back and forth on, I make my decision based off quarterback play, and that may be a real simplistic way of looking at it.
No, but it's the most important position
this time
of year. You're right.
And I don't even have to hesitate. If I have my choice for one game, are you going to give me a healthy Andrew Luck, or are you going to give me a healthy Patrick Mahomes?
I take Luck, too.
I'm taking Andrew Luck 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah,
I don't even have to think about that.
I'm with you, and I get a lot of flack over this. I've had a lot of arguments the last two months over the Mahomes train, and hey, great young player. I'm not taking anything away from him.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's bad.
But,
no, I'm not saying
man, ten. I'm with
Luck.
You. Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I mean, I think Andrew Luck is one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the game and has been for quite some time. And when you look at what this kid has been through, he's got a brand new shoulder.
Yeah.
He played with a lacerated kidney, for crying out loud. He's never had protection up front. And in my mind, Chuck Pagano outlived the life of his contract because of Andrew Luck.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. I got a feeling they're going to roll through it. And KC has a bad history in the playoffs. KC speed gets, you know, the cold weather and that grass, KC speed slows down a little bit. I think if they just take away Tyreek Hill, that they're going to win. Darius Leonard's good enough to take away the run game. He's that good.
No, he's
the
special.
Run and screen game, I think Darius Leonard neutralizes. So it comes down to if they can stop Tyreek Hill and keep Mahomes in the pocket, Kelce and whoever, like you said, Watkins, Conley, somebody else is going to have to beat him.
Let's jump Rams, Cowboys. The Rams defense is giving up 5.7 yards per carry. Ezekiel Elliott is averaging 5.7 yards per carry. Is it really that simple? If the Rams can neutralize Dallas's rushing attack, they win this game going away. Is it that simple?
I believe so. Mm-hmm. I believe so. And let's be honest, Beasley ain't healthy.
No.
We saw the gruesome Allen Robinson thing. That was or Hearns.
Hearns,
that's right. Allen Hearns. That was bad.
It was disgusting.
That was
if you haven't watched it, don't watch it.
Don't watch it.
Yeah, don't. Because
so they're going to be thin there. So if Aqib Talib, if Wade Phillips gets after this and crushes line of scrimmage and gets him in third and long, you're going to take your chances. He's going to blitz. He's going to get creative against Prescott, and he's going to say, Talib, you take Amari Cooper 1-on-1. You played him before. Hey, they know each other.
Mm-hmm.
They come from Denver and Oakland. So I like their chances. And I'll tell you, I think that would be a big thing for me is if McMay gets up and the Rams, McVay and Goff get up early and put Denver or Dallas, excuse me, behind the point board a little bit, behind the scoreboard. If LA scores twice, it's 10-0, 14-0.
It's a different game.
Game over.
It's a different game.
It's a game over.
It really is.
Because Dallas ain't healthy.
They're not. And as far as the offensive line for Dallas goes, they haven't been healthy in 2 years. They haven't been fully healthy in a very long time.
And, with an extra week to get ready, knowing that he was going to play Seattle basically he was going to play a run team.
Yeah, Dallas, Chicago, Seattle. You were going to see a great run team.
So Wade Phillips had an extra week to get ready for that. These guys have been, they've had a little rough run here, and they've been hearing about everybody but them. I think the Rams are going to be ready to play.
Todd Gurley healthy?
Yes.
Playing possum then at this point in time?
Well, when's the last time he played? It's going to be what?
It's been about a month.
Yeah, been about a month.
He's had about a month off.
Been about a month
and it wasn't
off.
A gruesome injury.
No.
It was swelling of the knee.
Yeah, okay. He's had a month.
Sunday games, Chargers, Patriots. For me, this is the AFC Championship. I said this at the beginning of the playoffs. I projected that the Chargers would get the Patriots because I thought the Colts would beat the Texans. So looking at my playoff bracket, I had this game circled AFC Championship. And the reason I say that is because I don't know which Chargers squad is going to show up.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't know. If it's the Chargers that I saw in the first and second quarter against Baltimore, they win this game. Right, if it's the Chargers that I saw show up in the fourth quarter, because Vinny, we you and I were going back and forth through text messaging during that Charger Ravens game. The Chargers offense was not spectacular in this game.
No.
The defense was incredible. Jackson had the worst quarter. His third quarter was the worst I have ever seen from a quarterback in the playoffs. He had negative 13 yards passing in the third quarter. That was because of a lethal pass rush. Baltimore established nothing throughout this entire game until the fourth quarter. I don't know what changed. But, again, the offense wasn't great in this game.
No, and they lost a little focus there. Like you said, for 3.5 quarters, that was one of the most dominant defensive performances in postseason history. The Chargers, they were dominant. So they're going to put it together. Now, one thing, looking at this, being a Chargers, I'm a Chargers homer. Everybody knows that. That defense in New England is not going to put the pressure on Rivers that Baltimore did.
No,
Baltimore's
going to
full court press. They did play conservative knowing that their defense was going to play better. I think the Chargers had a great game plan saying, hey, look, if you don't turn the ball over, we'll get threes, and they can't score on us. And it worked out. It was 23-3. So the game plan was perfect. So coming out now, they have a great pass rush, the Chargers do, and Tom Brady's not running around.
No.
So I think we match up good there. The thing that the Patriots do better than anybody is they don't beat themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as the Chargers don't beat themselves, I'm picking the Chargers to win this football game. They don't turn it over, and they don't make crucial mistakes. They're more talented than the Patriots.
I've lived by something on this show since it started in 2010. I refuse to pick against Tom Brady. I refuse. And most of the time...
That's a good rule.
It is a good
rule,
right? Most of the time, I'm going to come out on top.
Yeah.
More times than not.
Yeah, 80% of the time, you're going to come out on top.
You're going to come out on top. This is a game I could flip a coin on, really. Sony Michel, to me, maybe just be the X factor here. What does he open up for Tom Brady if you talk about the pass rush?
Well, it makes it easier for Tom Brady if he's in thirds and shorts. And if he's in third and long all day, the Chargers are going to win that football game. But I think the X factor is, and they played last year, and the Chargers had a great game plan, and they had the thing they didn't do well was contain James White. So if White's healthy and he plays, he's the real problem here. The Chargers have a problem covering running backs. They're the worst in the NFL at that. They give up more yards to a running back than any team. So even though they're a top five defense, they have trouble covering running backs. And that's what Brady does the best.
Mm-hmm.
Take advantage of your weakness. If Burkhead and White get going, it helps Brady. But I'm telling you, the Chargers have a little something going on the road. The New England thing's not going to bother this football team in San Diego. They're not going to be afraid of the Gillette Stadium.
That's the one stadium that I think it could affect. I think that is the one stadium in the playoffs that could affect them.
Weather maybe, but I don't think...
Just different there.
But that team's... They've been through everything this year on the road, and I just don't think that's a factor for them. I really don't.
Well, even when they're at home, they're not at home.
They're not at home, exactly.
So
they like to be on the road. Yeah. I'm going with my homer. It's tough. I think this is year Brady just looks mortal. And people say that every year for 5 years. Well, this is year. I think we have enough pass rush to give him trouble. And we've seen it this year. If you rush him, he has a lot of trouble. And I think this is the year that Philip Rivers gets it.
I'm going to go with Pats. In this game.
And that's how do you root against or pick against Belichick and Brady? It's a But I think Rivers finally gets his. He finally beats Brady.
Eagles Saints.
Drew Brees. I think I know the Foles magic, but I'm taking Drew Brees right here. He at home. And I think this one's not even going to be close. This is going to be my upset that it's going to be a blowout.
I'm done picking against Nick Foles. I went with Philly last week. Yeah. I went with Philly last week because I thought the inexperience of Chicago would play a factor, and I think it did.
It did.
And I'm talking about inexperience on the sidelines as well.
It did.
Nagy, for as great of a job as he has done this year, remember the over-under for Chicago at the beginning of the year was 6 wins. They get Khalil Mack, and it moves to 7.5, I think is what it went to. This is a team that won 12 games.
Yeah.
You know,
they did a great job.
And they dominated the Rams.
And they did a great job. And they make a kick, and they win. All that goes away in their first playoff game.
But there was inexperience on the sideline that played a factor. We're always going to remember the kick, but there were elements of that game that was lost on the sidelines.
But that first game is a win if he just kicks it through.
But it's a win if you have 10 men on the field before Philadelphia scores their first touchdown. It's a win if the best defense in the NFL can get one stop. It's a win. You know, I can use this over and over again.
Yeah.
It's a win if you don't let Nick Foles, who is still a backup quarterback, he orchestrates a 75-yard drive to win the game in the fourth quarter against the best defense in the NFL. I don't care who you're playing. It could be the Eagles. It could be the Rams. It could be the Seahawks, the Cowboys. Vinny, if you are a Chicago Bear fan, and I give you the scenario that you're winning, you're up by 5, okay, in the fourth quarter. One drive to win the game for the opposite team, your defense is on the field. You're going to take that 10 out of 10 times because this team has built a defensive identity. So we're going to talk about Parkey forever. I get it. I don't think it's completely fair to say the Bears are out because of Parkey.
No, they're not. But, you know, in playoff football, when that crucial moment comes, you got to make your play.
They didn't defensively. They didn't.
And they had him fourth down, and Foles made a great play. And Trubisky matched him and got him down the field, and you got to make your play.
And Nagy used his timeouts horribly.
He did it. I agree with you. I was actually yelling that during the game. Hey, what's with the timeouts?
Game was lost on the sidelines.
I'm just saying that's my upset pick. This is my upset pick because I'm not just this upset. I think Drew Brees, they beat him up. And in the playoffs, I mean, beat down would be 14 points.
So you think Philly wins?
No, I think Drew Brees beats him by 2 touchdowns.
Okay. I can see that. I mean, you go back to the original matchup.
It was 48-7. Yeah. It's not going to be like that.
This is a different Eagles team, though.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be like that at all.
Right.
I think a beatdown in the playoffs, if you win by 14 points in division round, that's a beatdown.
And I want to throw this out there as we run out of time. If someone would have told me a month and a half ago that in the Final Four in the NFC would be two NFC East teams, I would have laughed hysterically.
Yeah, I would have laughed in their face.
You might get one. You know, you'll get one team in the playoffs by default because that division has to have a winner.
Yeah,
it's possible to have the Cowboys and the Eagles square off in the NFC
championship game. Yeah,
and that is insane.
That's awesome. That's the best thing about the NFL,
I guess. Out of time on this edition of the show, Vinny. I always look forward to getting you in on Tuesdays. Thank you again.
I love it.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Do not forget, on our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak tonight, I'll be joined by Travis Anderson. We'll bring you the play-by-play calls. The Carbon Lady Dinos take on the Union Cougars. Be safe. We are out.